After the Mongols invaded Iran and succeeded in occupying it, they brought the same Chinese culture to Iran. It was from then on that we didn't use the word khalegari for cooking. Many believe that the beginning of eating ash and pilaf started from the time of the Mongols. Morteza Ravandi, the author of the book Social History of Iranians, believes that eating rice has been common in Iran since the 15th century. Here is Dashtkasan Temple, and it is a very important place because it is the meeting point of Iranian Chinese or Iranian-Mongolian culture. Arghun Khan decided to construct a temple when he still believed in shamanism. After his death, Ultaje Khatun, his daughter, continued building this temple, but when Oljao II became Shia Muslim, the construction of this temple remained half-finished forever. The important point is that maybe there was a Mithraic temple or a pre-Islamic facility here before the construction of the temple. We could see the signs of such infrastructure here. Why is it so important to us? As I said, it is a meeting point of Iranian-Mongolian culture. Ilkhanate architecture is more of Iranian architecture rather than Mongolian. There are dragon sculptures that are Eastern symbols. Iranian and Mongolian cultures have mutual influence. Still, many Iranian cooking terms are Mongolian, like plate, pilaf, and spoon, among many other names. These are the names that have remained in Iranian culinary culture since the time of the Mongols. And for this reason, I think this temple is a symbol of mutual cultural influence between Iranians and Mongols. Mr. Salimi, with his children, who are great in martial arts, make different and wonderful types of noodles based on the ancient traditions of their ancestors. They work in this workshop in Gozaldare, Sofla. They make a smooth dough from a good quality of flour. Sometimes they add turmeric or saffron according to different types of noodles. Sometimes they make smooth dough without using any spice and roast them in the oven. Noodles aren't used only in ash, and sometimes they use it like pilaf and eat it with khoresh. They sometimes mix roasted noodles with pilaf and make reshte polo. Different kinds of delicious noodles are cooked in different ways according to the tastes of the artist chef. The whole process of producing noodles is done in perfect cleanliness. Heyran in the Talish language means the place of cloud and fog. Gardan-e-Heyran is located in the west of Gilan province and near the Talish village of the same name on the road to Astara. The humidity that rises from the Caspian Sea reaches this 1,500-meter altitude. For this reason, Gardan-e-Heyran and the adjacent valley are always foggy. Gardan-e-Heyran, you can eat one of the most famous kinds of ash in the northwest of the country, ashadur. You can also see the beauty of nature here.
طبخ آش‌های لبنی در سراسر ایران رایجه. یعنی آش دوغ، آش ماست، آش قره‌قروت، آش کش.
Cooking this kind of ash is common in Iran. آش دوغ، آش ماست، آش قره‌قروت and آش کش are very common in different regions among different ethnic groups and you can find its varieties all over Iran. This kind of ash is popular after آش رشته, that is one of the most common ash and it is cooked differently in various parts of the country. The difference is that some of these types of ash adur are flavored with different ingredients. For instance, In Erdebil, they add garlic. In other places, they add mint and fried onions and etc. It has become commonplace that people go to nature and they cook ash there. They would also add mountain plants to flavor the ash. I think it is a great idea to eat ash in Iran's natural sites. Of course, eating ash standing up is not interesting at all. I did this on the instructions of my respected director. We must eat ash together with our friends and relatives and talk about interesting topics. Whenever you eat ash like this, please be kind enough to remember us as well. Ashe Sholi Yazdi is another type of ash that is cooked in our country. Ashe Sholi is very important in the life of people in Yazd. It is not the main dish, but it is very common, especially when people gather together. It is made of a wonderful combination of vegetables and beetroots. I think it is super delicious and healthy.
فوق‌العاده خوشمزه و به نظرم خیلی سالم هستش.
They eat ash sholi with sugar or vinegar, and they like it sweet. Tehran is a city that has been in a struggle between modernity and traditionalism for about two centuries. Like any other modern metropolitan, beauty and ugliness can be seen in this city. Following the procedure of accelerated and alien development, the beauty of the city has been replaced by ugliness. Tupkhane Square's original appearance was changed in a bad way and couldn't be recovered until this day. Tehran became the center of attention since the time of Shah Tahmasib I. He ordered the construction of fences and buildings in Tehran. Since then, Tehran has gradually attracted the attention of the people of other regions of Iran because it was famous for its wonderful climate and great fruits. Agha Muhammad Khan, head of the Qajar dynasty, chose Tehran as the capital, and after that, the development and expansion of the city was accelerated. The establishment of the royal court and military centers and the development of the Tehran Bazaar as a commercial center of the country in the later periods, especially during the period of Nasr al-Din Shah, elevated the importance of Tehran. And since then, the population of Tehran has been composed of all the people of Iran. Many gates were installed in different parts of the city, of which almost no trace remains today. In the onslaught of modernization of Iran, it was believed that the old buildings and monuments should have been destroyed. Here is the old Tupkhane Square and today's Imam Khomeini Square. They demolished the Baladiya, the city council of Tehran, telegraph office building, and the post office, and built a big and ugly building in their place. The place of the Baladiya remained empty until today, and the alley behind it is a disproportionate relic of its old vision. The Tehran Ray Railway and Telegraph were among the first manifestations of technology in the city. They used Machine Doudi to go to Ray and pay tribute to Shah Abdul Azim and visit Hazrati Bazar. People liked these moments very much in the old Tehran. Older adults have many memories of this exciting trip. Tehran began to expand irregularly at the end of the Qajar period. In addition, urban management organizations and new facilities were launched in Tehran, but the old way of city administration was still common. In the course of this irregular expansion, cultural and educational facilities, the new commercial and political centers were established in Tehran. Tehran became the center of attention, and this change came with crowdedness and chaos. Traffic and pollution in Tehran became unstoppable phenomena. These problems gradually became a part of the city's identity. More people were able to buy a private car with the increase in oil revenues. Congestion, crowdedness, and density of cars became immeasurable. There are few buildings left from the first period of modern construction. One of these monuments is the Parade Square in Imam Khomeini Street, and the other, Kahe Sharbani, which is currently owned by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. A special architecture is used in such buildings to create a modern space for new offices. A mix of Islamic and ancient Iranian architecture is manifested in this work. The prominent designer of this building is Gabriel Gouvrekian. He is the founder of a new style in modern Iranian architecture. Other buildings of this period, such as the buildings of the Milli Bank, the Civil Registry, and Alborz High School, which were all newly established institutions in that period, followed almost the same architectural style. Today, Tehran suffers from traffic and air pollution. Nowadays, there are more impressive sites to visit in Tehran. Tehran is among the big cities of the world with all of the weaknesses, strengths, the ugliness and beauty of such cities. علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة. The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Jannah wasiyul mustafa haqqan imamun nas wal jinnah.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We reached this phrase in the first sermon where Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about the fact that the prophets and the messengers' duty is to excavate and to bring forth the intellects that have been buried under the, you know, under imaginary superstitious concepts and beliefs, and to bring that intellect forth. And we discussed at length about that point. What we want to discuss, inshallah, today is another point that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions, another duty of the messengers, and that is وَيُرُوهُمْ آيَاتِ الْمَقْدِرَةِ, that the messengers, they show and display to the people the signs of God's power. And this is a very important thing, one of the most important duties of the messengers. And if you notice here, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says وَيُرُوهُمْ, that the prophets show the people these signs. Once the prophet shows these signs to the people, it's the people's duty to reflect, to ponder, to think, and come to conclusions regarding what they are supposed to do and what they aren't supposed to do in life, and to decide a good future for themselves, which will lead to their felicity.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, when you talk about these signs of God's power, a believing person is such that if truly he focuses on these issues and these entities that have been created by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that person would clearly see the power of God hidden behind the curtains of that entity itself. He would, in the start, contemplate and think about it with his mind, but then slowly and gradually his heart would also be able to witness that power of God. This is something that is there. It is there in our riwayat. It is there in the verses of the Quran regarding the fact that when people slowly work hard spiritually, a time would come when they would be able to witness the power of God directly. But right now, what the prophets are supposed to do in this particular phrase that is there in Nahjul Balagha is that the messengers, the prophets, are just supposed to show the people, point out to the people the fact that these things are, these entities are signs of God's power. They are signs of God's authority, and all of them manifest the power of God within them, to make the people realize this fact and to point them towards this reality. You see, there are many times that people witness and see things, but it is the way they see that is very important. A person, for example, may be looking at the mirror, but may not be paying attention to the mirror itself and would be paying attention to the reflection in the mirror. Or sometimes a person may be looking at the mirror and its shape, but will not be paying attention to the reflections that are there in the mirror. So it is how you look at something that is important. If you decide to look at something in a certain manner and be able to understand the dimensions of that entity's existence, then you will be able to pay attention to it. But if you don't decide to do that, then your mind will ignore that aspect and will not be able to focus on that direction. And this is something that is very common. If you look at various entities and various things in this world, you will see similar examples of what I have said.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
Now, I would like to give you other examples also. For example, there is a watchmaker, or a watch seller, let's say, and he is walking on the road selling watches, and he is seeing the watches, he's giving the people the watch, he's telling them, this is the watch, you can have it, look at it. But if you ask the watchmaker the time, he might not know the time. While he's been looking at all of those watches constantly, but he doesn't know the time. Why? Because he hasn't paid attention and he hasn't focused on an important aspect of the watch, and that is its aspect of showing the time. Similarly, we as human beings, when we look at these entities in the universe, various entities, all of them are creations of God and all of them manifest God's power. But we look at them only in one direction. We pay attention and focus to only one dimension of their existence, and therefore we don't realize that these are actually manifestations of God's power. For example, when we look at the mountain, we pay attention to the beauty, and we pay attention to its surface and its height and its, for example, its curves, let's say, and its jaggediness and all of that. You know, we just pay attention to the apparent aspect of the mountain, but we don't focus on the cause of how this mountain became. And even if we focus on the cause, we only focus on certain causes and not other causes that could be probably there. And this is because of the weakness of the human being, and that is why Allah sends the prophets to strengthen this aspect in the human being, that he needs to think further than what primarily or what, quickly comes to the mind, and go deeper than that. This is a very important aspect of human creation, and inshallah we pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that through these statements of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we can focus on the more important aspects of creation. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers for today's discussion, Brother Ali Alevian and Brother Sohail Sarani. Brother Sohail, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Assalamu rahmatullah. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I'm Brother Ali. Assalamualaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me here.
So Brother Mahmoud, the producer of this program, dedicated this new series of the program Viewpoints in the whole month of Ramadan to the topic which is rarely discussed, we can say, in the academic fields and also Islamic fields. And that is the book Nahjul Balagha and the significance of this book as tackled by the leader of Iran on different occasions and his different speeches. When you get to the text of Nahjul Balagha and through the character of Imam Ali alayhi salam, you want to know Islam, I think you have an authentic source now. But when you get to Nahjul Balagha and the very character of Imam Ali alayhi salam, then you can find how practical could a person be and be obedient to his master, that is Allah, and then the Prophet of Allah, that is Prophet Muhammad. Exactly. This is unfortunately what is missed in today's world, you know, when we want to refer into the interpretation of Islam, we start from the various scholars that live in our contemporary time.
You know, in one of the tradition, I would paraphrase that Imam Ali al-Islam says that know the truth and you will know the people of truth.
Mm-hmm. People
so,
of truth,
so
that's right.
There's the right methodology of knowing, you know, looking at Islam, that you need to know the truth,
mm-hmm.
and then you will know who were on truth and who were those personalities.
That's
and
right.
Very rightly mentioned in one of the tradition, we also see that, and again I'm paraphrasing, where our holy infallible alayhi salam says, if you present our sayings and our teachings to people as they are, then the beauty of them would make people follow us. You know, so that's very obvious. Like when you present the content to the world, and they will definitely, you know, Rehber also mentions in one of his speeches that those who are, those who are criticizing Islam, or those who have some issue, and then they are pinpointing each and everything about Islam.
That's all right.
Before doing that, I would like to tell them, and he clearly mentions that, you know, go and tell my words to them. Go and say them, tell this to them, those who are like, you know, in the Reformation, you know, quote unquote, like they call
That's
it,
right.
call themselves as reformative camp or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Go between them. And, you know, tell them that, you know, before doing this criticism, read once this book, Nahjul Balagha, and then see if you can criticize.
Any comments?
I just want to take this opportunity to say one word to the brothers or sisters who are listening to us, and to say that in case, I'm talking to all the Muslim brothers, whatever they are and wherever they live, whether they are, for example, follower of the Ahlul Bayt or not. They are from Shia or Sunni brothers and sisters. I want to tell them, if they want to look at the history of Islam in a just manner, by a just person, I just want to recommend them to read this book of Nahj al-Balagha. Actually, Nahj al-Balagha, the importance of history is quite clear to everybody, that if you work on the history, specifically the history of Islam, actually it works like a torch of guidance for you. So it's good to know the history of Islam first. But if you want to, for example, regardless of what faith or what sect you are following or what your beliefs are, just see this book and read this book and see if the person who is actually talking to you and narrating the history of his time is just or not.
In fact, many of the Ahl-Sunnah brothers, and sisters. They also believe that Imam Ali was the most,
knowledgeable,
highest rank sahaba of Prophet Muhammad.
Yeah, yeah. That's mentioned.
So, yeah. Definitely. They know that he was among the virtuous and the, among the virtuous and, let's say, the most excellent companion of the Holy Prophet. But I want to invite them to look at this companion of the Holy Prophet in another, with another glasses, with a new eye.
Because from a new perspective.
From a new perspective, actually. Here we see Imam Ali alayhi salam, to some extent, when he actually talks to you, he talks about the history of that time. He talks about the policies that a Muslim leader needs to take at the time that he is the leader of the Islamic Ummah. Why? Because we are in need of knowing what happened at the dawn of Islam. And the history will help us. As I said, it is a torch of guidance for us. And we are in need of knowing our background, our history, to see what happened to us and what... So by this, actually, we are preventing any other probable damage that might come to Islam and Islam world. So here we are actually immunizing and guaranteeing the safety of the Islamic Ummah. So when we understand that what is the duty of a duty bound, what is the duty of a Muslim at the time that he lives, because the leader of the Islam, because the Islamic leader tells you how, what's your obligations and what's your commitments in the Islam world. And beautifully, Imam Ali alayhi salam actually portrays the duties of a duty of a Muslim at his time, and it is working till today.
And it is not only beneficial for the Muslim lands, but the non-Muslim lands too, because there are some speeches and the words in Nahjul Balagha which are addressed to the humanity and the human beings in general.
Brother, when a true word is being said, it doesn't matter who is your adversary,
yes,
whether it is
a
Muslim.
I do want to say even the non-Muslims
but since,
can benefit from
why
this
did
book.
I actually address my Muslim brothers and sisters as my audience? Because yes, they know about Imam Ali. At least yeah, they have heard of him.
Yes.
But for anyone with any taste that yes, wants to look at Nahjul Balagha, he's free to come and take from this ocean.
You know, what is the interesting point is that when ISIS was established in Iraq and Syria, when you look at what they did, and when you refer to Nahjul Balagha of Imam Ali talking about the Kharijites, you can see the very much same significance, characteristics among them of the people who are...
Exactly. That's interestingly, you mentioned how Rehber says in yes, one of his speeches, he says, like, during today's time, we have one slogan all over. You can listen to the slogan. It's a similar slogan, but then the directions are so different from each other. Direction of Muslim countries,
yes,
and Muslim groups
yes,
are so different from each other that it's very high time that we need a guideline. And, Nahjul Balagha can play that part of torch-bearing things for us in today's time, because he drew parallel between that time and the time we are
that's
living
right,
now.
And this time.
Yeah.
That's all right.
And okay, just wanted to add this as well, because he mentions very nicely, he says, it gives you two very important takeaway from Nahjul Balagha. And the first part is your foundational core foundation of Islamic viewpoint or worldview. You know, how your tawhid is, how you
yes,
look at Nabuwat,
yes,
how you like look at prophethood and such, right? And then more importantly, the another part is the implementation in your practical life.
That's right.
So that's what you take out from Nahjul Balagha, because
okay,
Imam Ali lived up to that life, and he practically lived, as well as he, mentioned everything during his various occasions. He delivered those sermons and letters to different people during his 4 years or about 5 years government.
That's all right. Brother Ali, is this book, unreadable in some of the Muslim lands? I mean, is it forbidden to read?
No, I haven't seen anywhere to see it, for example, banned or, I don't know, to be forbidden in any, at least I have not seen anything like that, or I have not yet heard of it.
Okay.
But the problem is that it is not known to Muslims. This book is not that, I mean, the The book.
Do you know what is the question? The question is that maybe for the Muslim lands, this book and the people around the world, I mean, even Muslims, Nahjul Balagha is considered like the other books of Ahadith.
Yeah.
Like what we have of Bukhari and Muslim among the Sunni,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so many books of Ahadith among the Shia ones. Maybe this book is looked as a mere, we can say, akhbari, or we can say a narrative book.
So I wish it was seen as a, for example, hadith book among them, and it was known as a hadith book mm-hmm. among the Muslims. But the problem is that this book is not that known among the mm-hmm. Muslims. They have not heard of it. For example, I remember once I talked to some scholars from in Islam world earlier. When I was referring to Nahjul Balagha, he was asking what Nahjul Balagha is. So it seems that we have not, actually we as Muslims and specifically the followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, have not yet worked a lot to introduce this book to humanity. So it is our duty to do our share and to do our duty and to propagate and promote this book to humankind, not, and specifically the Muslims who know Imam Ali alayhi salam, at least as some as the leader of the Islamic Command right after the Prophet, and some at least as the Khalifa of the Holy Prophet. So they know Imam Ali alayhi salam to some extent, and it's more understandable for them if we tell them that this is the book that has been collected from sayings of Imam.
That's right.
But unfortunately, the problem is that it is even not understood. Brother, let the whole world aside, but those who claim to be the follower of Imam inside the
yeah.
country,
to
what extent are people actually are familiar with Nahjul Balagha? In some of our families and houses, we have not yet even one copy of it at home.
Mm-hmm.
So when a Christian scholar like George Jordaq reads it 200 times and he is still thirsty of reading it more, 220 some, if I'm not mistaken, and he's still thirsty of reading it more, it means that I have not yet understood the importance and the value of this book to make it that important for me, for my family. To read it, for example, in daily or weekly or monthly basis for my children.
That's
or
right.
to teach it at the schools. It is not even yet being taught at the schools in this Muslim country.
Yeah,
that
for
we
the young generation.
It's true that in some schools, actually, there are some competitions from some sermons or some words, but it is not a textbook for our students.
Or have
yet.
Not been translated to different languages.
Unfortunately, okay. It has not. Into English, I know it has been translated, yeah. but the translation, it's not good to be actually broadcasted, but they are very poor. Actually, translations of Nahjul Balagha are not as good as translations which have been made on Quran.
That's right.
But I think it's good to invite those who are able to come and invest at least on the translation of this great and important book. And it's good to be translated into different languages to different people, not only to the languages which are being talked and are accents in Islam world. No, to different languages it has to be translated, inshallah.
Al-Imam Ali alayhi salam, Sawtul Adalatul Insaniya. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the voice of the human justice.
Very true.
This is the title of the book of George Jordaq. Which was also translated into Persian language and also English language. And as you said, George Jordaq, after writing so many times the Nahjul Balagha, got understood that Ali is the symbol of justice for all the Muslims around the world. And this is the important point. We can say, if one truly research and search into the content of Nahjul Balagha, he can be familiar with the true picture of Islam and the true successor to Prophet Muhammad, and this is very important. Okay, Brother Suhaib, we got about 2-3 minutes. 1 minute? 1-2 minutes for your final remarks?
Finally, I would like to, you know, reiterate the same thing that as Brother Ali said. You know, when you look at the statements of Imam Khamenei and the lot of emphasis that he puts on Nahjul Balagha, I mean, I myself feel that, you know, I should, beside, like, we have a habit of reciting Quran during month of Ramadan.
Yes.
We should also have, like, you know, one or two iteration of reading Nahjul Balagha as
That's
well.
Right. Very good.
And inshallah, we get tawfiq that during this leftover, we
yes.
can use the best of, we can make the best use of our time and, you know, dwell into this precious gem, inshallah.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Brother Suhail.
Thank you.
And Brother Ali, for your presence in the program Viewpoints.
Thanks to you, brother.
The Book of Nahjul Balagha, compiled by Sayyid al-Razi, may Allah bless him. He was really a great scholar and author. He has also so many other books. but among, you know, what a tawfiq Sayyid al-Razi had to select and to, we can say, compile Nahjul Balagha. And, you know, in the house of the Shias, whenever you look, you can say in the bookshelf, beside the Holy Quran, there is one volume of Nahjul Balagha. And this is very important, okay? The point and the tawfiq that this scholar, Sayyid al-Razi, had, may Allah bless his soul, and also his brother, Sharif al-Murtada. Two great brothers who, we can say, were the source of benefit for the upcoming generations of the scholars after themselves. So this is our program on Nahjul Balagha, as was addressed by the leader of Iran on different occasions, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. For more information on this program and on other episodes, you can visit our website at parstudio.com/Ian Call of Islam Radio, also our YouTube channel, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanillah.
Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items. Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iran's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show. This time, our journey took us to the city of Abhor in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaron Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes. This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results. The government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported. It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, all industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications. Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of a legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages. In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative high-tech productions for exports. Research steered by scientific investigation plays a huge role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. And academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and the commercialization of products. Several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups. High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. Iran possesses a lot of intellectual prowess as a whole. Evidence of this can be seen by the high number of academic publications both nationally and internationally. Nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Figures from the International Web of Science show Iran was globally ranked 16th in 2019 for its citation work. Numerous knowledge-based companies that provide valuable research and products are born out of university, tech park, and trade zone incubators. These establishments provide platforms that support the creation of new businesses in various fields of advanced tech development as they start up. Incubators offer services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully execute their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. Moreover, incubators are an access channel for services such as workspaces and facilities, technical and legal consultations. These are important for the sustainability of both existing firms as well as innovative startup businesses. The goal is to increase regional economic growth and diversify the national economy. Such development support also strengthens the tech ecosystem and improves investment opportunities. Fire clay is basically mud, but a lighter, stickier type of mud with high alumina content. It's actually everywhere around us, but cannot be seen until it is uncovered from the earth. In its raw form, fire clay is found near or between layers of coal in coal mines. People have been extracting it from the ground for millennia to make bricks, ceramicware, tools homes, and a whole bunch of other things. Its qualities get even better when it's baked and stiffened. This clay has a great number of industrial uses and lasts nearly forever. Our quest for answers led us to a company that owns and manages at least five mines in Fars province. Esterlal Abadi Company specializes in the extraction of fire clay and the production of clay products. Fire clay is a refractory material that can withstand extremely high temperatures without losing its original properties. There are other types of refractories that this company also produces in small amounts, such as high alumina and melite ceramics. But its main claim to fame is the production of highly useful fire clay. It might be interesting to know that this company is not just a mine owner. It also has three factories. These factories make products like fire brick, washroom items such as sinks, and industrial ceramics. Its production facilities can make large amounts of ceramic parts that are used in various fields such as blast furnaces for coke, iron, and steel productions. Because fire clay is heat resistant, this material presents excellent qualities for outdoor flooring purposes. One of the benefits is it doesn't crack or expand when exposed to hot climates. That is why it is widely used across the country, particularly in central and southern regions where temperatures can often exceed 45 degrees Celsius. The quality of fire clay is assessed by its levels of impurities. This company can produce some of the highest-grade fire clays in the West Asian region with around 75% purity. In general, when the material is extracted, it is then transferred to the Research and Development Department where it is tested for quality. One of the competitive advantages of this company over similar firms in this field is the quality of its products that match international standards. This holding company has created dozens of direct job opportunities over the years, and hundreds more people are indirectly hired as well. Out of some 50 fire clay mines nationwide, this mine has been the only producer that extracts its products along the lines of exports. This company has faced many challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Some are related to the fluctuation of domestic raw material prices. As part of its future vision, it has also overhauled production processes to optimize outputs. Besides the mine we just talked about, there is one other major fire clay deposit which is located in Charmahale Bakhtiari province. This mine offers 12 million tons of proven reserves and it is set to produce some of the best quality refractories in the region. Each year, a combined average of 300,000 tons of fire clay are exported. Iran's tile and ceramic market have become very attractive with rapid socioeconomic development in the West Asian region. Also, there is an increasing need for new housing units in neighboring countries. There are some of the things that are driving Iran's export market in this field. So the country has stepped up its production to gain a larger share of the market. We looked at the latest figures from the Ministry of Industry to gain more insight into the productions in this field. Data showed that in the year 2020, roughly 400 million square meters of tile were produced in Iran. Such productions were estimated to be worth nearly $450 million. These productions were more than local needs, so nearly 160 million square meters of tiles were exported. Industry participants say that this sector is presently operating at only half of its total production capacity, adding that it has high export potential. With this in mind, the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade is working with the government to find ways to expand its markets through production. The goal is to increase production levels by 300 million square meters over the next 4 years. Analysts estimate that this will generate an additional $2 billion in foreign revenues if the strategic sector taps into the full capabilities. Fire clay does not only feed the tile productions. It also supplies raw material to manufacturers of sanitary ceramic ware, such as sinks. Iran currently makes copious amounts of these items. In fact, in the first half of last year alone, over 70,000 tons of sanitary ware were released into the market. Going off on information from the National Customs Administration, these items were mainly exported to neighboring countries. The country's light and heavy construction sector is booming with construction materials in high demands. It is worth noting that domestic raw materials, such as fire clay, meet 100% of Iran's construction needs. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are some statistics on the construction materials market. Iran's steel, cement, tile, and ceramic industries produced more than twice the country's internal needs. Last year, exports of these items raked in some $10 billion in foreign revenues. Tile, glass, and ceramic exports compose some $3 billion of total exports. Steel exports accounted for the rest. That's all based on statistics from the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. On another note, the country's mega mining and metal sector, which also supplies the construction sector, has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. Industry participants say this was mainly due to the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry, which led to more focus on other sectors. Much of this expansion is in large part made possible by linking research institutions with manufacturers. This step was critical for sharing knowledge in collaborative product development. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by.